Hello, everyone. Welcome to the June 2024 edition of the Logistics Pulse audio program, co-produced by Logistics Plus and Armada Corporate Intelligence. Thank you again to our partners at WPSC Money Radio for recording and editing today's show. Our June Executive Supply Chain Bulletin was released earlier this week and emailed to our subscribers. I am Scott Frederick, CMO for Logistics Plus, and with me is our regular guest and partner, Keith Prather, the Managing Director for Armada Corporate Intelligence. Keith, Independence Day in the United States is just around the corner. Can you tell me, who works on the 4th of July?
Yeah, like usual, I have no clue. Who works on the 4th of July?
Fireworks, of course.
Oh, wow. You are on fire.
Yeah, my dad jokes are kicking in here. Hey, speaking of Independence Day, this is maybe a little bit off topic from the bulletin, but as you are aware, 4th of July this year falls on a Thursday, and I'm just curious if you are aware of any research regarding the economic impact of, you know, the day a week when the 4th of July falls. You know, being on a Thursday this year, I have to guess that Friday is a quasi non-business day for many companies. So I didn't know if there was any research out there about if the 4th falls on a Monday or Friday or Wednesday or Thursday, what the economic sort of impact would be.
No, we don't have a lot on that because we don't know how many people are actually off on Friday and how many people go back to work. Some companies go ahead and recognize a four-day weekend and go ahead and give people that vacation, but others don't. But what we do have is a little bit of retail data. So this is kind of fun. We know last year over the 4th of July holiday, we spent about $15.8 billion. 4th of July ranks, you know, pretty low on the overall holiday spending, you know, list. But what's fascinating about it is we spent about $9.5 billion on food last year, and we spent over $4 billion on alcohol. So I don't know what that says about the country or what the 4th of July stands for, but we certainly enjoy it, don't we? Yeah, it's interesting. It's a big holiday, but, you know, you compare that to maybe Christmas, where over the Christmas holiday season, you're going to see, you know, 770-some billion in spending. And so 15 billion kind of puts a little bit of perspective there.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, let's get back on topic. Like I said, our June edition is out. What are the major headlines a supply chain manager should be thinking about as we close out June and head into the dog days of summer here, Keith?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. I know we're going to hit a lot of topics coming up here in the next few minutes, so I don't want to hit on those. But just in general, I think there's a lot of, not trepidation, but a lot of uncertainty surrounding sort of the second half of the year and going into early 2025. And I think what that's done in the supply chain is it's made a lot of supply chain managers really think about how early they want to inbound their peak season merchandise. And I think you and I have talked a lot about the fact that we see a little bit of early inbounding activity, and you can see it a little bit in the maritime data that we'll talk about later. You know, but I think supply chain managers are generally looking out. Right now, they've got a really good strong dollar, which lets them, you know, buy goods around the world at a pretty good discount. Also, you know, we've got a lot of countries out there and a lot of manufacturers that are willing to discount to try and get some volume. And especially throughout Asia, especially in China, you see a lot of discounting, deep discounting right now. And I think as we go through the end of the year, there's also now starting to emerge just a little bit of commodity uncertainty, and some commodity prices are surging. And so I think purchasing managers are trying to get ahead of maybe a surge in some of the copper prices and some of what we see across, you know, a whole host of different types of commodities and plastics and papers that go into products. So again, you know, and we'll talk about maritime later because we've got a surge in maritime rates. And so it just is a weird environment right now where I think purchasing managers are just trying to figure out how to really game plan the second half of the year, especially as we go into the peak.
Yeah, some of the economic data looks pretty robust. Our global logistics index for tracking the demand for supply chain services is still in that expansion territory. So those metrics look pretty good. I know, Keith, Armada has a proprietary model that tracks truck tonnage and forecasts some of the upcoming truck tonnage that might be coming into the economy with a high degree of accuracy, actually. So I'm curious, what is your model telling us about the freight market at this point?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, we touched on it in the brief, and I get a lot of feedback from that model, by the way, because people don't believe maybe that the trucking environment can be that strong going into the end of the year. Because right now the forecast shows total truck tonnage really exceeding kind of where we've been over the last 4 or 5 years. And we had a pretty good year in 21 and 22. We definitely had a good year in 2018. So when we're talking about truck tonnage kind of returning to those levels, it really raises a lot of eyebrows. And that model itself, as you said, has been running about 93% accuracy 3 to 6 months out. It's actually a little bit higher accuracy when we get further out. So you get 6 months to 9 months, it's batting up around 97 to 98% accurate. And I'll tell you, based on, I won't give like all the secret sauce that goes into it, but there's 18 to 22 different economic metrics that make up that truck tonnage index. And some of the things it's reading are some of the things that we've talked about, that when we see inventory to sales ratios kind of get back down into a lower level where supply chains are fairly balanced, and so a new order for products creates a lot of manufacturing activity all the way up and down the supply chain. We're just seeing a lot of freight demand get created in a very short period of time. So a year ago, if we saw 1% increase in manufacturing activity, it wouldn't necessarily translate into freight on trucks. We'd see a little bit of finished goods coming out of manufacturing or out of wholesale goods, moving down to destination where they'd be consumed, like a retailer or another wholesaler. But now when we see that 1%, it just generates activity all the way up and down the supply chain. And so we see a much stronger reaction in actual truck tonnage. And so I think the model is really kind of playing on that, and that's what it's looking at moving forward.
Yeah, and of course, we're seeing that in some of the price indices. Once again, the Fed's producer price indices for May are in, and the song sort of remains the same there with regard to the trucking modes. Full truckload rates are down 11% over last year, but they're flat month over month. LTL rates were down 1% on a month over month basis, but they're still up nearly 6% over last year. Parcel rates were up slightly month over month, but nearly 9% higher over last year. So while we're still kind of tracking flat here, at least the LTL and parcel modes are up significantly over last year. And the truckload rates are actually starting to, I think, turn and reach an inflection point where they're going to start heading up again. And certainly based on your truck tonnage model, that's probably what we expect, don't you think?
Yeah, I think everything you just said right on. And we're also picking up, like, if you look at the DAT trend lines data, or you pick up some of the FreightWaves data on truck capacity. I think it's kind of interesting because we've started to see over the last, maybe 60 days especially, a little bit of loss of capacity in the industry, and probably a lot of different reasons for that. But FreightWaves kind of reported that we're losing about 300 trucking firms a week, and a lot of those are going to be small mom and pops, maybe 1 to 2 trucks, a lot of independent truckers probably, but it's companies that are large enough to file operating authority regulations or applications with the federal government. So we're able to track them that way, and we know DAT trend lines. I see the number of trucks posting that they're available is going down on a month over month basis, actually pretty sharply. So we know capacity is getting stripped out maybe faster than we expected, and demand's coming on at a pretty reasonable rate, again, as we said, with the peak season coming in. So I think the pricing side of things is definitely going to firm up. And we know with the Yellow bankruptcy last year, when we've looked at that again historically, and we talked about it last month, that normally we would see rate increases of anywhere between 4 and 8% year over year. And right now we're running about 6%. So it's just right in line with those expectations. But I would expect going into the end of the year that we'll continue to see conditions kind of tighten, at least based on all the data that we have at the moment. And I still think things stay firm through the rest of the year.
Okay, well, we'll watch that domestically, but let's switch gears to the global side of things. We had some requests from our overseas folks that read the bulletin. They wanted us to include a little bit more data on some of the ocean air freight pricing trends in key global trade lanes. It seems some of those rates are on the upswing again. So to answer this call, and in addition to our normal Fed PPI tracking for ocean and air pricing that we always include in the bulletin, we did add a new page of infographics to the June bulletin that show a couple of additional sources measuring capacity and rates in the ocean and air modes. Keith, Any comments on these new data points and what they're telling us?
Yeah, really interesting. And I wanted to kind of save some comments for this. It's, you know, it's not a 2021, 2022 issue, but Scott, when you look at the situation in Asia with maritime cargo capacity and you look at what's happening with pricing, it does not feel good. And, you know, we're using some data from DHL specifically in the briefing. This shows just about every trade lane coming out of Asia seeing far more demand than available capacity. And a lot of this really stems right back to the Red Sea situation where, you know, we continue to get ships hit. We've had a couple sunk now, you know, off the coast of Yemen, and there's nothing really going to be moving through the Red Sea anytime soon. And because of that, we're still, because we're leaving freight on water longer, we're stripping anywhere from 15 to 20% of global capacity out of the marketplace. So when we go to things like the Drewry World Container Indexes and we see prices there on a year-over-year basis from Shanghai to LA, you know, up 130% or up, 170% from Shanghai to New York, you've got a real global supply chain situation kind of on your hands where capacity remains tight. We know with a little more earlier inbounding of peak season freight that there's just a lot of demand out there at the moment and prices are surging as a result. We know a lot of maritime companies took a GRI in May and June, about $1,000 a container for most of them. If you break it down on a percent basis, it was almost a 33% increase. You know, and I don't know how many of those GRIs would stick with contractual customers, but the bottom line is that the industry is able to now kind of push rates back up to cover their costs. And it's it is creating a global, kind of a global situation and affects inflation. I mean, there's just a ripple effect through the global economy. And so again, that's also going to sway, I think, purchasing managers' decisions on what they do. And, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty out there on the maritime side. You know, we've got East Coast, you know, port negotiations, some other things going on. So anyway, I think that's the biggest issue right now. And I'm just going to, one quick comment. We use the PPI ocean freight metric in the United States, and the data that we used in the report this last month, I don't think was updated based on the new GRIs taken. So we would expect that PPI number to go up in the next, you know, month or two.
Yeah, definitely. The shipping community is getting hit with some higher container rates on the ocean side. Also interesting, the air freight rates are starting to trend up again, too, after being pretty stable for a year or so. So again, things for supply chain managers to watch and things that we'll continue to report on in the bulletin as we go forward here.
Yeah, and Scott, I didn't mention the air cargo. You're right. So the one thing about air cargo is that a lot of purchasing managers are using those for tuck-in orders. So they're shipping in a pallet and they're expressing it in to try and get it ahead of maybe a stock out on an assembly line or stock out in retail instead of bringing in full containers. And so we do see that tuck-in ordering and that use of air cargo to be able to do that. And then, you know, traditional e-commerce and a lot of growth there as well. So you're right. We are seeing that uptick. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the good news back on the U.S. front is that our monthly port congestion index is showing that the imports and exports at U.S. ports are processing pretty efficiently. Imports are taking about 16% less time to process than it took back in December. Exports are doing pretty well as well, getting out of the ports. But those numbers could suffer soon as it looks like we've got some labor trade winds blowing again on the East Coast. Any updates on the labor negotiations in the East Coast?
Yeah, we don't have a lot. As you know, you and I have been through a lot of labor negotiations before together. And, you know, they go through phases. And, you know, normally we think about organizations going through the whole storming, forming, norming process. And with labor negotiations, it seems to be forming, storming, norming. And so they form the coalition negotiations early on, and it seems to be a happy kumbaya. The negotiations proceed, and then we get to a storming phase where you get a lot of negative publicity. And, you know, behind the scenes, you're probably seeing a little better negotiations taking place than what we're really hearing about publicly. And then you kind of get to the end point where we get a contract. And so we're in the storming phase right now. You've got both parties kind of going at each other, making comments about, you know, faith in negotiations. And we are definitely in the storming phase. And that doesn't mean that behind the scenes, things aren't going much better than what we're hearing about publicly. But it's just part of the negotiation process that we see in every labor negotiation. So we're at that phase right now. I don't know how much that sways sentiment with shipping managers. I don't know how much that rhetoric really pushes shipping managers to try and inbound into a different port, you know, shift their market share maybe to the West Coast or maybe bring it into the Gulf. Some of the Gulf ports are also going to be subjected to this, you know, change in the contract and these labor negotiations as well. So it'd be probably West Coast shifting primarily it would be seeing. And I don't know that we're there yet. But, you know, you've got a combination of factors. We've got the labor negotiations. We've also got what is supposed to be a very active hurricane season throughout the Gulf and the East Coast. So you're talking about impacting areas like Savannah, Houston, some regions like that that could see some disruptions. So you just got a lot going on right now, I think, around the region. But the good news, as you said, is if you take a look at the port congestion index right now, there's a lot of good flow through and throughput and really not a lot of changes. The Panama Canal is opening back up, and so we're seeing more activity through that. So, you know, generally without the labor negotiations in the way, it would be smooth sailing and, you know, it would be open for business and no concerns really on the horizon other than, you know, maybe the hurricane activity. So,
yeah,
I know I threw a lot in there. But
I believe that the current contract expires at the end of September, I believe. So we've got about 3 more months to work through this. So we'll keep an eye on that as well.
Yeah, I was just going to add, and that could be some of the reason also why we see some early inbound activity for the peak, you know, maybe just people trying to get ahead of what could be a potential shutdown starting sometime in October.
Yeah. Keith, I'm going to go a bit off bulletin here again, as you and I will both be attending the annual SMC3 Connections Conference in beautiful Colorado Springs next week. This conference is highly focused on the domestic LTL trucking industry, but from both a carrier and shipper perspective. I, of course, will be there as an attendee, but you, of course, will be there as a top keynote speaker. Without giving too much away, can you give us a little teaser preview of what topic you're going to be addressing and any themes you'll be emphasizing to the domestic group of truckers and shippers that are attending this conference?
Yeah, it's interesting. I love this conference. I love getting to see all of you. And so I always enjoy it. But it's I'll be focusing really on the mechanisms and the engines that drive freight volume. So instead of focusing a lot on what is actually happening in the LTL industry or the TL industry or other modes, I'm going to be focused on looking at the industries that drive freight volumes and how healthy they are and what the outlook for those are. So we'll look at manufacturing, retail, wholesale trade, construction, to really understand what future volumes are going to look like. And so it kind of ties into that trucking index that we talked about earlier. But I'll also be looking at maybe some mode shifts. So we'll be looking at the health of, you know, what's going on in the rail sector, not necessarily carload, but mostly intermodal, and then how that spills over into truckload and spills over into LTL. And so we'll be just covering some of those differences and what the outlook ahead is for those. And the way these conferences work, we typically try to cover the next 6 months, and then that leads us up to the next meeting, and then we cover the next 6 months after that. So I'm looking forward to it. We both have a lot of good friends there, and it's always a great conference, so looking forward to it.
Well, I definitely look forward to seeing out there, Keith, and look forward to your presentation, and we'll see what comes out of it. Maybe we can talk a little bit about what you presented in our next podcast next month, or maybe even put some data points in our next bulletin. I believe for this month anyway, that's all I had from a content standpoint or preview of the bulletin standpoint. Anything final that you'd like to add, Keith?
Just the last thing would be a little bit on the election. I'm not going to talk politics so much as I am just the impact on sentiment. And, you know, normally it doesn't have a big impact on what businesses do and how businesses think, but we are starting to hear just a little bit of a change in spending expectations toward the end of the year. And it has more to do with the Federal Reserve and waiting on interest rate cuts. But across the construction sector, we're starting to see projects be put on hold. And that'll have a little bit of an impact on, you know, raw material demand and freight flows, especially through rail, you know, going into the end of the year. And we hadn't heard any of that up until about this month. And now we're starting to hear a little bit of concern. And again, I think it's less about the election and more about the timing of when the next Fed's rate cut would come in. And so that's just something I think for all of us to keep an eye on. Again, it's not the election so much as it is just the Federal Reserve. And I would keep watching that. And then just the last thing I would say is I just hope everyone has a fantastic 4th of July. And please, please, just everybody be safe. And I think that's sort of the bottom line for all of us.
Well, that is definitely a good sentiment to end on. So In closing, I'd like to remind everybody that they can visit logisticsplus.com/logisticspulse to view our June issue and subscribe to future issues. Logistics Pulse is a complimentary value-added intelligence briefing for Logistics Plus customers, partners, and prospects. And as Keith indicated, we wish you all a happy early 4th of July. Stay cool, stay safe, and be sure to keep your finger on the pulse of logistics.